You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator, and it's your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked about charities. I'm Art Taylor, the host, and with me today is my dear friend and colleague in the nonprofit sector, Tom Bugnano, who is the CEO of Creating Healthier Communities. Tom, welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Thank you, Art. It's a real pleasure to be here and looking forward to the discussion.
Tom, you and I go way back to my early days at the Wise Giving Alliance when you were, I think, finishing up your tenure at the American Diabetes Association.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And then you took this opportunity at an organization then called Community Health Charities.
That's correct.
So like everything in the world has evolved, you have evolved and the organization has evolved. But why don't you tell us about your early career and how that maybe led you, first of all, to wanting to seek a life of service and giving back to community as a career?
Well, Art, I think the best way for me to frame that is that, as you well know, I've had almost all of my career in nonprofit with the American Cancer Society, 20 years with the American Diabetes Association, and now 16 years here at CHC. And I look back, and I'll be real honest with you, when I got into the nonprofit world, it wasn't because, you know, that was the career choice that I was going to make. It's actually an odd story. I had applied for a job with a pharmaceutical company in Phoenix, Arizona. I was one of the finalists, and they finally said, "I'm sorry, you don't have any biology, any science background. We'd hire you, but you got to have something." And they said, "You know, get some sort of a job in health and come back and call us in a year." And it was at that time I saw an advertisement for the American Cancer Society. I took the job thinking I was going to stay 1 year and then have this glorious career in pharmaceuticals. And the rest of you might say is history. You know, 40 years later, here I am.
Wow, that's kind of an amazing story. We never quite know what our interactions will bring us, right? What our career, where our careers will take us, no matter what our intentions. I tell a lot of people, young people in particular, who have these grand plans about how their careers are going to unfold, to be open to whatever may come, because you never know what you may be get to experience and how it'll shape your life and the enjoyment and joy that you get from it.
Oh, that's true. But I can tell you, Art, and I think this is where you were going, I can tell you why I've stayed in nonprofit for all these years. And that is, and again, without going into too much detail, I, like a lot of people, it has to do with my family. It has to do with the values my family, my mom and my dad, my siblings, my aunts and uncles gave me. And my dad was born in this country, but just barely. I had brothers and sisters and born here, some born in Sicily. So although it sounds a little bit cliche, it was that kind of immigrant ethic of we're glad to be here. The way that you prove that, you know, you appreciate everything that's been given to you in America is that you give back and you serve. And so that's really what's kept me going. All these years, I have been so amazed at the nonprofit world, what it can do when it's effective, when it's effectively managed and focused. And you know a lot about effective nonprofits and those that aren't, Art.
Well, you've been with pretty effective ones throughout your career. And I would say that knowing you part of the reason they were effective and have been effective is because of you.
Well, thank you.
Your keen sense of leadership and giving people the power to do their jobs well and having a clear vision for what you want to achieve. So you've been with community health charities. Well, it was community health charities. You had, we're going to talk about why the name changed too.
Right.
But you started there about 16 years ago. What was it that drove you to want to do that work?
I think it was at the time, again, a lot of practical considerations. I had a great career at American Diabetes Association. When I left, I was the chief field officer and loved that organization, loved it then, still love it today. But I wanted to do something more, not just focused exclusively on diabetes, but something more broadly in health. So there was an opportunity at that time, you're right, community health charities. And actually, CHC's history goes back 65 years. So we've been around for a long time. And over that time, Art, as you well know, some things have remained the same. We'll talk about the changes. But then it, the attraction was, at that time, it had relationships with the best of the nonprofits in health. So you would start with the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and American Cancer, American Heart, Diabetes, Leukemia, and you'd go all the way down. And it had these relationships. And the goal at that time was to get money, compile funds from the corporate sector and from the public sector through what was then called workplace giving campaigns, employee engagement campaigns, and then do our best to promote those charities within those organizations so they could receive more funding. So over those years, we've never really honestly been able to add it all up, but between public sector campaigns like the combined federal campaign or state, local, municipal, or campaigns at an American Express or a Microsoft, we've had a role in funneling billions of dollars literally to those nonprofits. So that was the attraction. It was the chance to work with so many great nonprofits, so many great leaders, and to be in a position kind of being neutral, being an honest broker.
So much has changed in the world of workplace giving over the years. You and I can probably think back to when we first started working, how people would come around to your desk and ask you to contribute to the United Way, right? That was,
right.
Or if you worked in government, you'd get a request to support the combined federal campaign. But a lot has changed. What would you say are some of the biggest changes in workplace giving, and where is it headed?
Boy, I wish I had the answer to your last question, the crystal ball. Let me just say this. The changes have been, as you know, are very dramatic, especially within the last 10 years. Everything you said is true. Up until that point, it was a lot about camaraderie, a lot of the, you know, the literally going floor to floor, department to department, and getting people excited about giving and volunteering. That has changed. I mean, there's still some of that going on, but two things have really changed. One is the technology. Today, there are vendors in place, and overall, it's been a good thing. They can process contributions and provide services at such a more cost-effective manner than historically anybody else can do. And that includes us or United Way or anyone else. So that's changed. The technology simply has made giving easy, seamless for companies. They get the accurate reports. Now, there's a downside, because when you've done that, instead of maybe some of the companies we used to work with, we might have brought in 200 health charities. They might have already had maybe a couple of hundred others. Now there's 1.5 million charities in every major company in America. So there's a downside to technology. Some of the intimacy has been lost, but on the whole, it's there and it's not going to change. And that tells you about the future. The other thing that's changed is giving. And again, you're an expert on this. I mean, you know this better than almost anybody else in the industry. Today, giving is so personal. It's so tied to social media. It can be, you can give. It takes all of 30 seconds to go onto a GoFundMe page or to a website, including, you know, your organization or mine, to be able to process a contribution and to do it at the time you want to and the place that you want to do it. So giving is not so exclusively tied to the workforce anymore. And I think that's the other thing that's changed. Is workplace giving still a factor? Yes, there are hundreds of millions of dollars raised every year through employee giving campaigns. But it's not the same as what it was, and I don't believe it ever will be. So I think you'll see it continue to change. It's so much more tied into art, and this is a little bit about what we still do at CHC and our core business, our historical business. Now companies really want to talk to us more about engagement opportunities, not just volunteering, but how do you engage some of the employees in some of the social impact issues that are going on, and how do we get our employees to rally around a certain cause? So today, workplace giving is a lot more complex. It's not a transactional business anymore. It's a relational business where you have to know what the company is looking for and how they want to build that trust barrier with their employees, and then giving's going to follow.
Well, you know, Tom, I would want to point you to this idea that maybe some of the reason for the great decline that we've seen in family giving over the last 20 years or so may be connected with the decline in these powerful engines of generating donations. You know, I kind of knew we were in trouble about 7, 8, maybe 9 years ago when I was sitting on an airplane with a young woman, significantly younger than me. She wouldn't have been around the time of my early days in the workforce. And I asked her, because she was wanting to know about my career, and I told her some of the things I was involved in. And I asked her about the combined federal campaign, because she was a federal worker. And I asked her if she was contributing to the combined federal campaign. And she didn't know what it was.
Right.
And that just blew me away that a person couldn't know what the combined federal campaign was. But it pointed to how much our approach to encouraging people to give had changed. You know, when I was early in my career, someone would come around and say, "We're going to beat the next department. How much are you contributing?" I imagine that's not happening anymore.
Not too much. And again, you're absolutely correct. I mean, you can look back over the years. You mentioned the combined federal campaign. It was only 6, 7 years ago, $300 million annually. Today, mm-hmm. it's less than $100 million. And the federal workforce has not shrunk by 2/3. So it tells you there's something that's changed dramatically in terms of the attitude towards giving. And then the freedom that departments have, whether it's Department of Defense or Social Security Administration, what they can do to excite people about giving. And so it is a combination of technology has made it easier. Technology has made it more personal, more private giving. There's good aspects to that. But certainly when you want to rally people around a particular cause in the workforce, it's a lot different. It's a lot more difficult. But there's other implications, I think, as well, Art. And again, I'm speaking to somebody that knows this as well as I do, and even better. Today, one of the beauties of the traditional employee engagement campaigns, and some of the companies still talk to us about this, an Anthem, we'll talk about them, Blue Cross Blue Shield, they still will say, our employees want to give to this particular company. Can you vet them? And that's a lot of what your organization does, you know, really pointing them, this is a legitimate, credible nonprofit. It has a historical record of financial accountability. They're actually delivering services. Today, that's not so easy. Opportunities to give, to GoFundMe or new causes come up. People are much more inclined to give emotionally, to give to that particular cause. And it remains a passion of mine. I mean, and it always will, as long as I'm in this business. Donor beware. Take a look at the 990. Take a look and see, through your organization, is this organization worthy of my time, my money, my talent?
That's so important, Tom, because you mentioned there are over 1.3 million organizations out there. And how's a person to know if the donations they make are going to an organization that can really do something meaningful with it? How do they know they can trust the organization to do the right thing with the funding? Which is why we exist. We sort of exist as the Wise Giving Alliance to try to help with that. And I hope people will continue to use our service when they are in need.
Art, I will, and you know this, everyone I talk to in the business, every company, I always encourage that. And I'm not neither one of us can make predictions, but you're hearing a lot right now in the news about certain organizations being questioned, about money going to them that was never really ever spent. That really hurts the entire industry, right? No matter who it is and how it happens. The other thing, and we'll maybe talk a little bit more than that, I know you track the Edelman Trust Survey every year.
Yeah, I
just saw it the other day, and it's increasingly startling to me, this trust gap and who people are trusting. And yet there's still a higher, well, matter of fact, one of the things I think your guest last week talked about, the whole notion of private equity philanthropy, right? And venture capital. There are two forces where there's still a pretty good level of trust. One is business sector and the other one is nonprofit. I think in the report from Edelman, 61% of, again, the people that they surveyed still trust, quote unquote, the business, the corporation. About 59% still trust a nonprofit. Now, underneath that, considerably underneath that, is government, media, and other organizations. So I'll just give another plug for what you do and what you've stood for. That trust in that business will be there as long as they can believe what that company stands for, their values, and that includes where they're actually investing their money. Are they giving to organizations that are actually creating social change and health change, or are they giving to organizations where, you know, there's a question about where those dollars are going?
Well, you're so right. Trust is the key currency in the nonprofit sector, because donors will never know everything they need to know about an organization, unlike they would with a business, right? With a business, we can know right away if the product or service we got was worth the money. But we'll never quite know that with our donations, so we have to trust that organizations are doing the right thing. Well, Tom, we talked a lot about transition and what's changed in the environment that you're operating in. How has CHC reacted and adapted to changes in the workplace that have now seen less people maybe donating to charitable organizations?
Right. It's tracking where those dollars are going. You're right. The pie chart continues to grow. We're told that every year. But when you look into that pie chart, where those dollars are going are shifting, in some cases dramatically. But I'll give you the short history of where we are now, because, again, I think it harkens back to our founding, to what we believed in 65 years ago and still do today. And it has a lot to do with trust. What we, about maybe 6 years ago, five, 6 years ago, to be honest, we saw the trends like you did, because we talked about them often enough. We knew what was happening in workplace giving, and that, again, the vendors, and they're not good or bad, or they're just simply technology vendor, for-profit vendors. They were moving into this space and changing dramatically how companies responded to giving and how employees. And we had a choice at that time to say, look, we've been in business 60 years. We have accomplished our goals. When we began, most of our health charities were not in workplace giving campaigns. There was only United Way and then maybe a couple of others. But that's not true anymore, right? As you said, over a million charities. So we could say we're done with it. But our board, and I believe, you know, our leadership at that time, and this was my passion, I said one thing that we should not throw away. We have relationships at that time with over 2,000 nonprofits. Today, it's over 5,000. We also have relationships with about 2,000 corporations. Those are networks. Those are companies that, by and large, have trusted us over the years as, an honest broker, neutral, somebody that was very concerned about accountability, vetting charities. We spent decades building those relationships. What else could we do with those relationships if we wanted to stay in the health field but alter our field of vision? So, long story short, and again, anybody who looks at statistics in this country on health, in one sense, you could say we've made a lot of strides, and we have. But that progress is not the same for every segment of our society. And you know I'm talking about communities of color.
Yeah.
So we simply said, and I remember the discussions on our board, it was, what's changed in 20 years in certain zip codes with diabetes? Not much. Yet there have been billions of dollars invested, but there still wasn't the change. So we knew there were other structural or institutional obstacles there. It wasn't just access to healthcare. It was equity issues, racial equity issues, health equity issues that were at the heart of it. So that became our goal and our mission. And today, we're still doing our core business. I mean, we're raising tens of millions of dollars for our nonprofit partners. But most of our focus and most of our direction today is trying to address those gaps. We see textbook, they're called social determinants of health. But for you and me, what that means is everything that relates to a person's health living in a community, how they were raised, what schools they went to, how they eat, what the air they breathe, is the house that they're living in a safe environment, or is the head of that household having to move every 2 to 3 years because of income inequality? So we knew that that was the root issue. You're never really going to achieve healthier communities unless it's healthier for everyone.
Yeah. So as your mission, how do you see creating change or leading change within that objective?
It is, again, staying focused on communities. I think one of the other main changes, and again, I enjoy your podcast, so I'm thinking of some of the ones I've heard recently about the emphasis about hyper-local, everything truly like politics, health is local. What we're doing is going into selected communities, and again, our constituencies are the same. We have corporate partners, we have business partners, and we have nonprofit partners. But maybe in a community, it's not 2,000 partners. We're working with selected partners in a particular community that are addressing a certain aspect of social determinants of health. You mentioned Anthem earlier. So I think, as I told you recently, just I think in December, we were awarded a $7 million grant by Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield to really address maternal health care for Black women, because there's a shocking disparity between non-Black mothers and Black mothers in terms of mortality, in terms of complications from the birth, preterm births. So you have the child and you have the mother both adversely impacted. There are reasons that exist. So they gave us money to be able to work with some of the leaders at Emory University who had developed a predictive index that would tell you well ahead of time, this woman is at risk and here are the things that you can do, how you can help that woman. And so part of the grant is addressing the predictive nature, doing the research. The other part is providing direct services, whether that be through coaching, whether that be through doula, whether that's providing transportation after child care, everything that that mother, the stress. So that's probably a good example of what we're doing this day. But what remains the same is we're an honest broker. We don't do the maternal health care. We're working with organizations like Indiana Minority Health Coalition, like Black Women's Health Imperative, one of our member charities. We're working with groups in Georgia, at Grady and Morehouse University. So we're working with partners that we know are experts in this area. We're doing the heavy lifting in terms of the convening, bringing everyone together from the business community and the nonprofit community, doing the project management, so to speak. We're accountable for the dollars. Anthem gave them to us. We're going to provide them to those nonprofits. But the big change, and maybe I'm kind of giving you more of the answers in terms of where we are now, the attitude is workplace giving is great. You provide money. In this arena, we can provide funding and support and project management, but it's going to be somewhat on a pay-for-performance basis. In other words, you have to be able to show that you've got a track record. And that's the other thing that's made, I think, dealing with community health different these days, Art. And again, you're one of the leaders, I keep saying that, in terms of technology. What's available today is technology that wasn't there 5 years ago. You've always had the attitude of philanthropy, right? The venture capital investing. Now you can tap into technology platforms, particularly in health, that will tell you this particular nonprofit, this individual was, their needs was addressed by this nonprofit. It was done in 2 days. Here are the outcomes. So you actually can track where this person has moved through the system and which nonprofits have served them. Our purpose in addressing social determinants of health is to work with that nonprofit, They've got a track record, but we want to give them funds that will build their capacity to do more. So it's very similar to what I think Sean talked about on one of your recent podcasts about private equity philanthropy, where they want to invest. We're a nonprofit, but taking very much the same approach. We want to invest strategically in those groups who can do more, but we want to give them funding that will allow them to continue to do their mission. We'll do the project management. We'll bring the leaders together. We'll bring the folks that can really address this together, and whether it's maternal health care, whether it's substance abuse, whether it's mental health issues. That's the direction we're going at today.
Well, that's beautiful. And that's a terrific use of $7 million. And kudos to Anthem for seeking you out to provide that type of funding. You're going to do great work, and I think a lot of people will surely benefit from your collaborations. And by the way, Tom, I want to point out that of all of the people in the sector that I've connected with over the many years, you are one of the best collaborators that I've come across. And I don't know, Tom, if there's a particular ethos that you have for collaboration, but you do it so well. What would you say to people and organizations about collaborating and what it can deliver for mission-based organizations and people they serve?
I guess my response would be, and you're right, you and I have talked endless hours in the past about collaboration, and particularly how you've addressed it, and you've always seen it as a cornerstone of the new philanthropy, right? The future philanthropy. I share that belief. So let me see if I can give you a fairly concise answer. One, you have to tell the truth. You've got to go to community leaders and sit down and, I'll say this nicely, put away the white papers, put away the 13 collaborative meetings they've had that year. That basically was a lot of talk and it produced a lot of platitudes. Look at the real data. Tell me that the needle has moved in this particular community. And they, most of them know the answer. But most of them take their approach is cancer. Their approach is maternal health care. Their approach is mental health. In other words, they're doing their part of it, but there isn't that comprehensive community involvement. That's, if again, looking back at social determinants of health, and I hope I'm not stressing this too much, but there's almost nothing that happens at a community level that doesn't impact your health. This is what I'm passionate about. If you're born in a certain zip code, you have trauma from the day you have been born and raised. And yes, later on, it does have to do with access, but you start at that point. You've got to recognize that that's where you've got to begin the healing and the reconstruction. So bringing those groups together, telling the truth about that, saying, we want to provide a opportunity for you to work together. And we're not the first ones that have done it, but I'll tell you this, I think we're one of the very few that have done it that can say to them, and we're not going to become your competitor. Our job is to funnel money to you to do more. And we're not going to build infrastructure, and we're not going to build a lot of edifices that are going to require a lot of money to keep, you know, funneling in. What we're going to do is work with you on a project by project basis, provide the funding that we know that you need. I feel so strong about collaboration. There is no way you can build a community's health, improve a community's health, unless you have people from the faith-based sector, you have government, you have nonprofit, you have business. But you have to give them a formula to work together where they can still do their individual mission, but win by what you're doing, providing them. And again, please, if I'm going off, the thing I'm so proud of is that some of the people we work for, I'm looking at a project we did in Indiana a year ago, organizations tied to the Indiana Public Health Association. I mentioned the Indiana Minority Health Council. They've all been around for years. There was a trust built. Let us take this project. We'll take funds. We'll invest it in that case, building a health equity index in the state of Indiana. So we could tell anybody, these are the nonprofits that are truly involved in social determinants. But by the way, these 14% do one thing. These 22% do three of the social determinants. There are some of them that do all five. In other words, they're looking at education and training. And we created an index so that you could really be able to quickly find what are the most effective coalitions. And that's really what it is to work with. One thing I'm most proud of is after the end of that year, in one organization in particular, but all of them are now receiving grant funds that they never would have been able to receive at that level before, because we let them take the lead, give them the visibility, built their capacity, and now they're able to be sustainable.
Wow, it's a wonderful time. Well, you know, we're getting down to the end of this, and I want to just say to you, we've been doing this, my friend, for a long time. And at some point in the next decade or so, we're going to be handing over the reins to others to carry on our work. What would you want people to say your legacy was? And what are some of the most proud moments that you've had at CHC?
A couple. One of which I just mentioned, and this kind of new iteration of our mission, to see organizations that maybe were a little bit distrustful at the beginning, or they're used to what collaboration usually means, which is we'll do a lot of talking, but I'm going to protect my, you know, my property. I'm going to protect my programs. I'm not going to share that data because there's no win-win. We're seeing many situations now in Cleveland. We're working in Atlanta, in Indianapolis, where that's changing. Those groups are actually seeing that there is a benefit to working together. You can share data and you still will get your mission served. You still will get the visibility. No one's going to take that away. The other thing I'm most proud of, and again, I keep thinking of so many things because we've worked together on this. You helped me out years ago in Chicago by addressing my board. My board of directors is one of the most engaged boards. I'm so proud of them. You will find people on our board from Walmart, from Chevron, from United Health Group, Kaiser, Kimberly-Clark. It isn't just the corporate names. It's what they represent. Our board is one of the most, in the classical definition, diverse boards, engaged boards, and diverse by the real definition of diversity, which doesn't just mean ethnicity. My board is 60% people of color. It is 60% women. That's a checkbox mentality. These are people that have specific skills in health equity and supply chain management and understanding CSR work and environmental, social, and governance work. We see that today. I'm really proud of my board. I'm proud of our corporate leadership council that we've been able to bring together. The chair of that is from Johnson & Johnson. I've got FedEx. I've got Disney. They're all there, but they're there for one reason. They believe that together, if they invest in a community through the right nonprofits, they will see a greater return on investment and actually be able to see the needle move. So I'm proud of the board. I'm proud of what they stand for. And I'm especially proud how much they are engaged and they own it. It is, and again, I know you understand that there are boards and then there are boards, and most of them are not, in fact, not effective, not informed. This is a board that owns our mission and feels personally accountable for it.
Well, that's wonderful. And I'm going to just say that I'm very proud of you and proud to call you my friend and colleague. And I am just all in awe of what you've been able to do with your life and the good that you've done for people, for donors, and our sector. So let me just say that.
Art, I'll just return it to you, but I know we're at the end. What you're doing in this podcast, what you're doing in your life's work, what you've done by bringing people together and pointing them to the future, we need 100 more Art Taylors out there. Because all of us, our legacy is don't take our foot off the pedal. There has to be an urgency to our work, and we need to almost compel those groups. Look past your personal interest, work together, focus on the community, focus on the people that are most in need, and work together. You'll find it's a better formula than what you have now, each scrambling for the, you know, the resources and trying to drive it just to their organization alone. So you're the leader in that, and we need more people that believe in that and will get us to where we've got to go before we turn in the keys to the car.
Well, wonderful. Listen, to all of our listeners, now let me compose myself and just reach out to you a little bit. I want to thank you for tuning in to the podcast, first of all. And to those of you tuning in for the first time, if you want to be a subscriber to our podcast, I hope you will on any of the major podcast platforms. You can also find us on YouTube if you are a YouTube viewer. I'd also ask, if you're so inclined, to make a donation. You can go to our website, give.org, and make a donation to the Wise Giving Alliance. Or you can find us on Patreon, where you can make a subscription or a donation there as well. And I hope that you'll tune in to all of our other podcasts that will be coming out each week. And we thank you for listening.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's terms of service.